You are listening to Animated Indulgence, the explicit and opinionated podcast where grown men talk about cartoons. Each episode, we'll pick apart, analyze, and dissect an animated series or movie.
Warning, there will be spoilers, even potentially for shows and movies that are not the topic at hand.
We may watch cartoons, but we don't watch our language. Discretion is advised. Welcome, listeners, to Animated Indulgence, where grown men watch cartoons. I am Airhammer.
I am Deus.
And I'm Majoric.
And tonight we have a special guest. Introduce yourself.
I'm Implied Kappa. I get invited because I never stop talking about Adventure Time.
Also nepotism. Sweet, sweet nepotism.
That's where I get all my jobs.
Except we're not paying you. Don't expect any pay.
I'm just doing it for the exposure.
Us too. Speaking of which, everybody pants off.
All right.
Way ahead of you.
Today, we are talking about Adventure Time Seasons 1 through 5. Yeah. So who wants to lead us into spoiler-free?
I'm most intrigued by what Airhammer has to say about this, because he's never seen the show at all, so I'm going to be pushing Airhammer.
Yeah, this is another one of those programs that I've never seen prior to us starting the podcast, just like Gravity Falls and Steven Universe. This one definitely gave me that what-the-fuck-am-I-watching feeling when I first saw it. This show follows the zany adventures of Finn, a human, and Jake, who is a magical yellow dog, in their antics and adventures around the land of Ooh, I believe it's called. O-O-O.
O-O-O.
O-O-O. And yeah, that's the easiest way to put it. There is a vast number of characters.
It's a show that loves its guest stars and has tons of crazy characters to have them star as. It's almost bizarre beyond anything we've watched, basically, except for maybe regular show. There's, like, kingdoms full of breakfast food. There's literal, like, sentient candy running around. It's absolutely crazy, bonkers, bizarre.
I would describe this show as a short-format, absurdist fantasy comedy adventure with hints of slights of life.
Okay.
It is a wild one.
I would just call this a children's show much in the same vein as the book The Little Prince, where on the surface it very much seems like it's meant exclusively for children, but there are deeper themes that build up around that. And I really appreciate that, because I'm always a child at heart, but I get bored with anything that's overly simple. So there's something for both parts of me in this.
Very true. It's a short format, semi-episodic serialized show. They typically do wrap up the adventure of the day in a single episode. So pretty much within 10 minutes, they present you with what's going to happen and round it up in some way or another before the episode ends. But there is an overarching world and storyline going on. The events connect to each other and are cause and effect related to other episodes in the series.
It just takes a long time for it to reveal itself. It's just seemingly things that you were supposed to forget about actually matter and have relevance later on the show. So yeah, pay attention.
It's got a great voice cast, lots of memorable guest stars, and a lot of great music.
And John DiMaggio.
He's one of the main characters.
Yep, it's right there on the title, Adventure Time with Finn and John DiMaggio.
One of the things I know for sure we can talk about in spoiler-free is the comedy style. I don't think how they tell their jokes or anything is going to spoil anything. The comedy style is really interesting because it rarely uses a very blatant joke. It seems like it's almost more about timing and unexpected responses.
Well, I mean, this comedy right there is subverting expectations.
Yeah, I think more than the usual, though. They could have done some very bland, on-the-nose jokes, especially considering how crazy and wild the world is. As Mojo said, there's literal talking candy and breakfast food walking around. It is not just there because it's zany and wild. It's actually a talking ice cream cone walking around. And they could do so many bad jokes with that, but they almost never do.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just treated as normal by everybody. So it's actually not a very good target for humor that they built the world.
Well, that kind of respect for the world building and not using it as leverage for comedy is worth mentioning, is worth discussing upon itself, because that's not a high road that a lot of shows would take. If you build up this world with talking ice cream cones, I'd expect most shows to have jokes about the ice cream falling off and then being sad, or then melting, or getting turned upside down. Something silly like that, some sort of bizarre visual gag.
And or like that... the leader being named Neapolitan Bonaparte.
You would expect something like that to happen, but what, maybe once in three seasons you get something like that? It's certainly not common. To me, that's worth something, because as Kappa said, it's not necessarily just for children. It's simple on the surface, but that narrative complexity also pairs well with the style of humor and how they want to present that humor.
I guess another thing we could throw into it, spoiler-free, is a glaze over of the theming of it. It's very much, you couldn't get it by the title, a adventure, kind of in the style of like D&D. They're out and about, and there's monsters running around. They're solving problems for villagers. It feels like Finn is trying to be an RPG character, but in real life.
At the risk of spoiling one of my major influences and inspirations, I think of it very, very much as a natural progression from the old Super Mario Brothers cartoon. If you consider that world, where there's talking mushroom people and fire flowers, and Mario is on an adventure to save the princess every week, it's not far off from that, but progress to a more logical conclusion, where the pieces sort of fit in place a bit better.
I remember Zelda was on Friday. I always look forward to Friday.
Well, there's a little taste of our second part for seasons 6 through 9. When we get to that, I think Super Mario Bros. Is definitely an influence. At its core, I would consider Adventure Time a show about great, well-rounded characters dealing with the bizarre, difficult, and absurd things life hands them. It really is a character-driven show.
That's really one of the things that attracts me to the show. It sold to me as this just kind of fun cartoon that referenced a lot of video games subtly, and they were just going on goofy adventures. Really, the characters are much more rounded than I expected, considering that I just thought that they were going out and doing these epic quests. It sounds like there's going to be a lot more action, and it's going to be all about the crazy shit that they're doing, but really it's about the characters every single time.
Some of the best episodes are episodes where they're stuck indoors and it just becomes an introspective self-exploration.
One of my favorite episodes is one where it's largely one character the entire time, and it's amazing that they can write well enough to do a full episode that way.
I think I know which one you're talking about. But
it's one
several.
I've referenced in conversation before.
Yeah, I think I know which one that is. But they've actually done several like that. We watched one episode where BMO was pretending to do this noir murder mystery, and that was practically all BMO.
That was really the first big character exploration they did with him, too.
But that's another example that we actually watched that had a single character dominate the episode.
So we already kind of dipped into it a little bit, both Kappa and I wanted to jump into expectations.
Please, I'm ready.
My expectations for Adventure Time, I honestly don't know what to expect here. I have viewed, I think, one or two episodes on mute before. I know that the characters look rather quirky, but as I've seen of other shows recently, that is irrelevant, so... I'm not exactly sure what to think of this program, but if it is considered that popular, then I'm sure to enjoy it.
What do you expect plot-wise?
Well, I don't think it's going to be anywhere near a regular show, that's for sure. Like, how far do you go with a talking dog and a guy who has the most bizarre outfit I've probably ever seen on a character? I'm going to expect magical antics.
Okay.
I think that's the best way I can put it.
Would you say you expect a serialized show or something more episodic?
Episodic.
What about you? Oh, Deus, you've already seen the show, so...
I'm current on the show. Yeah, I think I may have missed
some of the episodes. I guess you get to rewatch a little bit of the early episodes and see something you haven't seen there, but...
I did indeed miss some of those, so I'll be able to catch up on those and fill in the blanks where the few exist for me.
As for me, I have seen a couple seasons of the show. I don't want to spoil too much for Airhammer, but or I guess nothing really I said would have been spoiled, but he has no context, but I still don't want to go too much into it. I've seen a pretty decent chunk, enough to know that I like it, and I'm looking forward to seeing more. I've heard that they've got a system going down where they're making, like, mini-movies, and more like a consistent stream of Steven bombs. Like, I'm kind of looking forward to a bigger, more structured format near the end.
I will say here in expectations that I enjoy the later seasons quite a bit more than the early seasons, and I really appreciate how well the show has grown and how it's utilized a lot of the same stuff to give you the same content in a very different way as it's gone by.
And I just want to point out something earlier else. I don't know if this is going to make it into the cut or not, but regardless, it's an interesting note. I'm glad that we had Airhammer watch Steven Universe so early, because you fell in love and you saw something you loved in Steven Universe, right? And it clicked really early, right? If your first adventure into a more modern, weird show had been something you didn't like, you might not be accepting of ones afterwards.
Possibly.
What I expected before I originally watched the show was nothing, really, because I learned about it approximately, like, 5 minutes before I watched it. Like, I didn't really have time to build up expectations. It was like, hey, I want to recommend you to the show. You want to watch it? I'm like, okay. And then I watched it. I'm like, oh, okay, I like this. I'll watch it.
I was just aware that a lot of people really liked it, and it was one of those shows that was constantly being recommended to me for reasons that didn't sound terribly deep. It was just like, oh yeah, it kind of references video games, which is not necessarily the sign of a good show. I don't know. But other shows that were recommended to me for really surface things. I actually started it because I didn't expect much from it, and I was moving, and I had a lot of things to pack away, so I put on something I thought that I would not pay attention to very closely, and for the first, you know, 3 or 4 episodes, that was true, but yeah, my low expectations really, it made me choose a very bad show for putting something on in the background and getting things done, because it was not as superficial, surface, fun, light as I expected, even, you know, early on. I was just catching things that really made me want to pay more attention to it.
I'm not really sure what circumstance had me watch Adventure Time first. I'd been recommended it. I'd heard a lot of people like it. To me, I didn't really get it because the art looked a little weird, but I was in the mood for something silly, I suppose. That's the only explanation I have. And from the few clips I'd seen, I had no idea that it was serialized, so I just started some random episodes. I don't remember which one I watched first or anything like that. I know I watched quite a few out of order before I realized that there's connections and narrative to it, which is, I suppose, a benefit for a kid watching it on TV because you don't have the burden of having to know what comes first. But once I realized that, I started back from the beginning. I know one of my first dozen episodes, I stumbled into Simon and Marcy, and that was the one that really opened my eyes. Oh, okay, this is something special. This is something deep. And once I had realized that, once I stumbled upon that, I went back and went to the start. And to be honest, the first half of the first season is not really anything special. So kudos to you for sticking that out.
I'm looking over the episode list and I'm thinking, what attracted me about these first 3 episodes? But I don't know, I think I just saw a progression into the deeper storylines, even if these are nothing compared to the later ones.
See, like, I agree that the early episodes aren't the greatest, and that show definitely gets better over time. But you know how you said you were pitched on really shallow things and you decided to put it on the background? And I guess I kind of saw those shallow things and enjoyed them enough to keep going and grew into the stuff that was even better. I guess I just enjoyed it at its base level already and was really surprised by the additional depth. So I will add that. I wasn't expecting the additional depth when I first got into it, so that's nice.
Yeah, I feel the same way in that. Like, I don't remember what I said during the expectation recording, but this is another one of those programs that just seemed like, okay, I saw the commercial, everything looks completely weird. Would I actually enjoy this? Probably not. And, you know, now that I have seen it, I do like it. Just from that first observation, it doesn't seem like this is a kind of a show that would have depth and character and intriguing stories, and it does. You're right in that the first season isn't all that amazing. Like, my first favorite episode was episode 11, so at least something came out of that first season. But I didn't really have another favorite until around early in season 3. So season 2 had no impact on me whatsoever. But it's built up a lot since, and I'm looking forward to see what happens in season 6 and onward. I remember back in the summer, there were some points where we were probably just hanging out here on Discord or watching a stream, and I mentioned a couple of times that I had Adventure Time on in the background that I had on TV, but it was muted. I was only visualizing, and I think the episodes were from season 8, and even then I still didn't get it.
For full disclosure, Cap and I have seen beyond season 6. We've seen all the way through, I have at least seen all the way through the current aired episodes as of recording, which is mid-season 9.
December 2nd, 2017.
Yeah, I've checked the episode list 2 days before they started airing new episodes and said, still nothing. And then I've missed like a dozen episodes now.
I've got quite a bit of catching up to do because I've only watched like a season past, or maybe barely even that past our current viewing.
Yeah, season 5 seemed like a reasonable halfway point. Rest assured, we will get to seasons 6 through 9 in a different episode, though.
So, yeah, expectations roll by quick. Want to get to the meat?
Yes.
Yes, please. The characters.
Warning, the spoiler-free section is now over. Continue listening at your own risk.
Before we get into any particular character, I need to say something a bit more broad. In my opinion, the characters are all absolutely delightful in this show, and how well-rounded they are, how real they feel, is because they are defined primarily by their ambitions and their flaws. I think that is the sort of character building, the sort of writing that is, well, it's uncommon even in the best of works, and in children's programming, it is extremely rare. It's like a diamond.
Except diamonds aren't extremely rare. They're just really expensive.
Look, I don't live in South Africa, and I don't have mine. They're pretty damn rare to me.
Okay, so we're going to jump off with the main three.
I think it would be a shame not to start with Finn the Human.
He is played by Jeremy Shada.
Shada.
I think he was actually played by his older brother in the pilot, just for trivia fun fact.
Yep, and he voices Lance in Voltron, and he is the current Batman.
Batman, the other animated series.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called.
Many. That's actually surprising. I didn't know he played Batman. I knew he had played one of the Robins at one point.
Yes, the younger Robin.
Yeah, but he's currently a Batman. Totally unrelated, but I have his signature, which that's neat. I met him, and it was pretty cool. But yeah, onto his character, I guess.
He's a character who's defined by his development throughout the series. I mean, he's just a kid to start off with. He's shaped by the world around him. He's a stand-in, but he's hard not to sympathize with.
For the sake of clarity, I'd like to point out that Finn the Human is supposedly the last human, and he was adopted by Jake's parents, who are talking, sentient dogs, fully sapient. We don't know what happened to Finn's parents. He was found as a baby, abandoned in the wilderness.
His own shit.
Yep. It was a traumatizing experience for him.
Boom, boom.
Yeah. And Jake's parents took him in, adopted him, and he considers Joshua the dog his father and Jake his brother, with no ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah, there's one point where somebody is talking to him about his dad, and he immediately thinks Jake's dad.
Finn has very strong morals and ethics as well. He's the archetypal hero. He aspires to be a great hero someday. He considers himself a hero by, I don't know, occupation, I guess.
Not only is he very heroic, but he's very kind-hearted, always helping people for the sake of helping people, not necessarily for the glory all the time. I mean, he likes that too. He wants to be a famous adventurer or whatever, but...
I think if there's one episode that really sets the ground, actually one that I referenced a second ago, Memories of Boom Boom Mountain, where he's trying his best to fix everybody's problems, but everybody's solution conflicts with somebody else's. But he keeps trying at it, and he never settles for something easy that helps most people. He doesn't stop until everybody's happy, which even in episode 10 out of God knows how many, that's really setting the stage for that character trait very early.
Speaking of which, he is just a kid when the show begins. He found his calling very early in life.
Yeah, he's kind of like your lead RPG character. He likes to jump in and save the day whenever trouble starts brewing.
He's 8 years old and has a sword.
Yep, with his trusty sword.
He's very much still learning about life. He's very much the younger brother to Jake's older brother. I know that explicitly states they're brothers, but that relationship is more than just names.
Yeah, there are a lot of times where he explicitly sits down and gives an older bro advice.
Yeah, Finn takes it in stride usually as well. It's really his coming of age story.
Finn's got a rather peculiar design, which is one of the things I always found very weird about the show whenever I saw stills or commercials or such. Because of his outfit, he just kind of looks like a big lump of a body with four lanky limbs. And when in consideration to other characters that you see later in the show, he definitely looks less human than others, even though he is the human. He has long flowing blonde hair that you almost never see. He has this white hood caps type hat that he wears pretty much all the time. It's incredibly rare that it comes off. But yeah, when he's actually out of his typical clothes, he looks a lot more human than he does with the clothes on.
Yeah, his character design is, I believe, chosen for the sake of simplicity and ease of animation, but also to help fit him into the world a little better. I think he wants to fit in. I think he understands that there aren't any other humans, and maybe being weird is normal there. As it stands, he's not just this righteous hero. He's also a little reckless and young. Jake definitely has to bail him out of a lot of situations. Though, he's a tough kid. He definitely takes what he earns. He is not shy about getting his comeuppance.
Did you say he's 8?
8 is my stand-in young age. I think he's more like 12 when the show starts. Something around there.
Yeah, because he stands out a lot more like a teenager to me. So yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, I think he's 11 or 12 when the show starts.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's 11 or 12 because a couple seasons in, it's explicitly stated he's 13. They don't really talk about his birthdays often. It only happened once, I think. Maybe twice.
Yeah, most of his growing up isn't marked so much by age expressed as number, but as kind of coming-of-age moments. Though they do mention his age explicitly a couple of times. It's hard to tell exactly how much time has passed.
Yeah, especially when he wakes up and, how long have I been? Oh, you've been in a coma for 6 months. Oh, is that literal? Are we supposed to start counting now? Finn is also somewhat spiritual. He's, I suppose, taught that in some ways from Jake, who's a very mellow guy, but I think he takes to it in a different manner than Jake, and he's meditative at times, despite his eagerness and rash behavior. When he feels like getting introspective and spiritual, he commits himself to that just as full force as he does adventuring and heroics. One time he discovered he was reincarnated from, a comet, a butterfly, a one-armed bandit girl.
Since you're bringing up spirituality and such, I have noticed a particular saying that the characters will bring up often, and that is, oh my glob. Like, here we have God, and here they have glob, G-L-O-B. I don't think this is referenced in any kind of religious manner or anything in the show. It's just that that's the word they use. Yep. Is glob a person? I don't know this.
I will say nothing. I will say nothing.
As far as I'm aware.
You will say nothing.
Hey,
okay.
Maybe. Okay.
Which says a lot, probably, but I'm going to say nothing.
Outside the scope of this podcast, we'll say.
Yeah, there's going to be some to talk about later. You'll see that at some point.
So we are on to Jake the Dog, then?
Yes. Jake the Dog, played by John DiMaggio, as we brought up before, who has a very extensive resume, but a lot of people know him as Bender the Robot from Futurama.
Or Waka from Final Fantasy X.
John DiMaggio is well known for dozens of roles. He is prolific. Jake the Dog, not so prolific. He's the ultimate slacker.
I often call him the heart of the show. I don't know if everybody agrees with me on that. He's the fun, really.
Most of the time I agree with that, yeah.
I mean, there is enough depth to him that there are plenty of exceptions to that, but by and large, if you leave Finn and Jake to their own devices, Finn is going to be taking things very seriously. He's going to be very hardworking and try and make things right, and Jake is just going to try to get along. There's just one point where he tells Finn explicitly, I don't agree with this adventure, so I'm going to be the comic relief in this episode. And then he's completely stupid for the entire episode, and it's so Jake.
You call him the ultimate slacker, but he's no Rigby.
Oh,
that's true. No, he is the ultimate slacker, because he actually succeeds. He's got that balance. He's very zen. He knows exactly when, where, and how to slack. He does not overindulge. He's got it perfected.
I like that some of Jake's most fun conflicts are between his desire to just be Jake and to do the right thing. Like, he'll be caught between saving Finn and eating a sandwich. That is, like, the ultimate Jake dilemma.
And because he is Jake the Dog, he has fantastic stretchy powers. He's an anthropomorphic yellow dog who walks on 2 feet, usually, does people stuff, talks like a person. Everybody else understands him. In fact, there's several other dogs who do the same thing. Dogs are just like that. And Jake's stretchy powers are absolutely unique to him. When you first watch the show, his stretchy powers just seem like cartoon absurdity, like Mickey Mouse's rubber banding from back in Steamboat Willie, where his legs go crazy. No, Jake's actually doing that. That's literal to the show. And his solution to the fin or sandwich thing is to stretch out his hand into a giant catcher's mitt, have his hand do all the work while he's standing there eating the sandwich with his other hand.
His stretching abilities are the absolute, like, craziest you could think of. Mr. Fantastic has nothing on Jake. Jake can, like, fabricate entire, like, false people out of, like, a lump of his fat stretched into another person. And Jake's also a ventriloquist.
I think my favorite Jake episode, as far as the stretchy powers goes so far, is the cop episode, where he is just obsessed with turning himself into cop things. And so he turns himself into a badge, a cop car, I think a gun at some point. And he's just going nuts. It's like the best visual gag, and it's always the same character.
Yeah, I agree. I think the cop car is the extent of how far they take the stretchy powers. Not because it's the limit of his powers, but because it's a visual gag in most shows. It's completely absurd. It's like, look at me, I'm a car now. That's the joke. No, with Jake actually turns into a cop car. He literally does that. He's got cup holders because he really likes being cop stuff.
I'm curious about his love for cop stuff because he kind of has a shady past. Even though he didn't know it was wrong.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was wrong.
Jake's moral compass is, he's not a bad guy, but it's a little off tilt. He used to steal, apparently didn't know it was wrong. I don't know how he got to his, I don't know, teenage years, I guess, before Finn was adopted. I'm not sure exactly how old he was, but I don't know how he got that old without Joshua teaching him stealing's wrong. But yeah, he used to steal a bit. Turn over a new leaf, and I think the only real motivation for him doing anything bad now is laziness.
Jake is the older brother, always ready to give Finn his advice and stuff, but he's also there for Finn with romantic advice, because he already has his own love life going on with Lady Rainicorn, that should be mentioned, and he has 5 kids? I can never remember them all.
5 kids.
Yeah, they're 5 kids. Quick, can you name them all? Go.
Jake Jr., I'm done.
Jake Jr., I'm done.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, hold on, I can at least do 3. I know Kim, I know Jake Jr., TV...
Oh, TV was the other obvious one.
Yeah, TV's a pretty obvious one. Viola, that's 4. I'm sorry, I forgot the 5th one. Jake also plays the viola, which was the source of his daughter's name.
Jake Jr. is played by Kristen Schaal, who is Mabel Pines on Gravity Falls. And the whole time that I hear the character, I'm just thinking of Mabel. Like, you do not fuck with Mabel.
Charlie was the 5th one.
Charlie, yeah. So Jake has a lot of aspects to his personality. He's a huge, massive slacker. He's got not the best moral compass, but he's a good guy. He is lazy. He will get motivated by the weirdest little random things. He's always super supportive of Finn.
And he always kind of wanted to be a foot.
Yeah, yeah. He likes to experiment with new experiences in life.
If I were to sum Jake up in one word, it would be whim.
Yeah, one of his zanier episodes for me is when he made this sandwich, which was like the best sandwich ever, even contained the soul of a lobster. He was obsessed with this thing, and yeah, it got stolen from him, and he just had to get it back.
Goddamn magic man.
Time sandwich.
Curse you, magic man.
There's time sandwich, and then there's everything burrito, all depending on whether you feel like, you know, traditional cuisine or Mexican.
And bacon pancakes.
There was a point right after I watched the episode that featured the song Baking Pancakes where I woke up and I said, I'm going to do that. And so I put on a 30-minute version of a mash of Baking Pancakes and Alicia Keys' New York, and I just played it while I fried up bacon and made pancake batter and then cooked them together and then ate them, and then I'm still not tired of that song.
Within the last couple of weeks, during one of our watch together nights, we have been checking out Adventure Time music in multiple languages, and the Germans know what they're doing. We love their intros and their other songs, and Bacon Pancakes in German just sounds really good.
If you watch any version of Adventure Time that's not in your home tongue or English, make it German.
I know a bit of German. I'm really curious now.
Next up is Princess Bonnabelle Bubblegum, or Bonnie for short. She goes by lots of different nicknames.
Peebs.
Peebs, or PB, yep.
Peebs, Peebles, PB, Bonnie.
Bubblegum is voiced by Hendon Walsh, who is Starfire on Teen Titans, and Genyo, I think that's the name, on Thundercats.
Princess Bubblegum is an ancient founder of her own civilization and her own species. She's an avid scientist and a responsible diplomat. She's really, really complicated. I think she's probably the most compelling and well-rounded character in the show. Not quite my favorite, but definitely the most compelling to me.
She is like a chaotic, evil, crazy scientist. She's like Dr. Frankenstein of the Candy Kingdom world.
I don't know about chaotic evil. I would
definitely
not chaotic neutral is what I meant to say. Chaotic neutral.
No, it's definitely worth mentioning. She's done evil stuff before. She's devious.
She's chaotic.
I disagree. I think she's a control freak. She doesn't like chaos at all. She controls way too much and can't let go.
She doesn't play according to society's rules.
Exactly. Like
she built her own society. Why would she have to? It's those things that make her so weird. She's basically a demigod to the candy people. And she's a very approachable, real, normal person to Finn, Jake, Marceline especially. Even sometimes the Ice King. She's a scientist at heart, but she takes up the mantle of ruler of the Candy Kingdom more often. I think sometimes she'd be happy if she could hand off the crown and just be a scientist all day, but she doesn't trust anyone and she can't let go of control long enough for that to happen.
She's that boss, if anybody has had that boss.
I was going to say that she's very chaotic in her scientific endeavors. There's scenes where she's just like, has her specimens, she's just willy-nilly, like picking them up, cutting off their legs and attaching them to the other ones. Just, like, absolutely no disregard for sacrificing James. And, like, dude, we could just respawn him. We could just, like, recreate him. She's very...
I think that's what makes her... makes her really compelling. She's willing to sacrifice someone if she doesn't think there's any other way. She's willing to make the tough calls. And she's super, super interesting as a character. I don't know how long it took the writing team or Pendleton Ward to think of her and to round her out, but she is one of the most complete characters that I think I've ever seen in any television show. You could put her into any setting, and it's pretty clear what she's going to do. She's one of the very few that I could say that about.
Most characters aren't fully formed in the first several episodes. She's just a princess, and then they kind of break all of that by making her actually fully in control as the ruler of the Candy Kingdom, and also a scientist. And they've kind of developed her flaws as the season's gone on.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit there, because the first episode, the first time you see her, she's in her lab equipment. She's a scientist immediately. The first thing she's doing is trying to reverse death.
I didn't mean to say that the scientist thing was developed later on, but they were trying to break her princess mold from the beginning by making her a scientist and also the primary ruler of the kingdom, but they developed her flaws later. Well, I mean, she obviously had a flawed approach to solving the reversing death thing, but the questionable nature of her ruling has kind of grown depth over time.
Yeah, I don't know what else there is to say for me, but I find her one of the most interesting characters to think about, but not necessarily one of the most amusing on the screen.
She seemingly cares very deeply for her people, but also they're very much disposable to her. So that's the conflict that I see.
And the thing is, it's both true. She does care very deeply, and each one is disposable for the greater good. And there's the conflict between that she triumphs in.
I still try to understand the character, really. Like you mentioned chaotic evil. Well, that is true in one regard. lemon grab.
Well, that was a mistake.
One person that I wish she would dispose of...
But it's Justin Roiland. You can't get rid of Justin Roiland.
That hair was not a fan of Lemon Grab.
No.
Yeah, and those episodes are grating, but I just find them absurdly entertaining, regardless of the character.
See, you mentioned her.
Not liking Lemon Grab?
Save it for later.
10,000 years dungeon!
Save it for later.
Oh, man.
No trial!
So clipped. So clipping. The audio there.
Okay, you mentioned her species at some point. Do they really elaborate on that? Like, she is basically human in form, but she has pink skin and her hair is literal bubblegum.
She is expanded on in later seasons in more detail than you might expect. She is a really, really interesting character, though. She's, as far as I know, one of the first candy people and really created the entire species scientifically. Well, I think scientifically, just to not be alone, I guess. I'm not sure what her motivations were, but she's like a god, a mother, a queen, and the crazy mad scientist all rolled in one for all the candy people.
Yeah, like there's an episode where she reverses her age to the point where she's basically a child or a very young teen. And as a result, this is where we're introduced to Lemon Grab. And because of her age, this deems him capable of becoming ruler of the Candy Kingdom in her place, which she then returns to her original age to take it back.
Which shows that even when she's reduced in age, she's responsible enough to take the kingdom away from a loony maniac like him. But we'll get to him in detail later.
Oh, God.
We've talked about Lemon Grab, but I think it'd be a shame to skip ahead of Ice King.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, we have the Ice King, a.k.a. Simon, played by SpongeBob himself, Tom Kenny.
Also the voice of Heifer from Rocko's Modern Life, or Dog from Cat Dog, just about...
Oh, he's got such a big resume, yeah.
And everything.
As prolific as John DiMaggio. The Ice King was a human. He's been enthralled by an ancient magical crown who's kept him alive and driven him mad at the same time. He's been alive for over 1,000 years and doesn't really remember his past. He's obsessed with kidnapping princesses.
But yeah, I mean, you see him as just this really archetypal, snidely whiplash kind of villain who kidnaps women and wants to make them love him, which kind of speaks to how lonely he is. He just becomes this tragic figure more and more as the show goes on, where you don't necessarily see him as exclusively evil for shallow reasons. He doesn't have a lot going for him. Makes it really hard to outright hate him. He's hard to like, but you pity him.
He is very over the top. He's always kidnapping princesses, but it's almost like he doesn't realize that it's wrong half the time. It's like,
I didn't know it was wrong.
It's obsessive. It doesn't matter to him if it's wrong or right. He has this urge to do it. And we find out throughout the course of the show, when we discover parts of his history, that his compulsion had to do with his history. His girlfriend, his fiance, disappeared after the magic started taking hold of him. He was just a normal person in a normal magic-free world like today, and he put on this crown that he bought from some Norwegian dock worker, started spouting off weird stuff, started having visions. When he took off the crown, his girlfriend was terrified, and he never saw her again, and his nickname for her was Princess. He's always, for the last 1,000 years, been looking for his princess. That's the only thing he's got left that he can hold on to. And he doesn't even remember Betty, his beloved. He just remembers the nickname, so he's obsessed with kidnapping princesses. His memory loss is quite an allegory for Alzheimer's and dementia, and the episodes where Marceline and the Ice King are together on screen are always very powerful and poignant because they always touch on that. Marceline knew him from a long time ago before he lost himself to the crown, and she misses him.
It's almost like you're talking about two separate characters. The crown is partly the crown and Simon, because you mentioned the princess thing and other aspects too. Like, he knows that he has an affinity for Marceline. He always comes back to her, in her words. He always hunts her down for some reason or another. Simon is very much a caring person. He loved and cared for his girlfriend, obviously, but also when he found Marceline, took her in and took care of her. Used the crown despite not wanting to protect her. And you see all those aspects flooded into his other half.
He's also a complete loner. He lives alone in an ice mountain in the Ice Kingdom,
True. He's surrounded by...
There's Gunther, Gunter.
Okay. I guess I kind of cut you off.
Many other characters living in the Ice Kingdom.
Yeah, a bunch of snow golems and a bunch of penguins all named Gunther, Gunther, Gunty. The penguins are absolutely a trip. They're basically all the same character, because you never know which one you're seeing. They all look identical and don't really identify each other. There's one that likes breaking bottles.
Or maybe more than one. Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. At least one of them likes breaking bottles. So I think we should touch on Betty for a moment. We've spoken about her, and she really does sort of belong in the Ice King's part because she's part of his story. I don't think she would stand up much as a character on her own without talking about Ice King. Betty is a normal human from normal human times before magic. She was magically taken from the past to the future, to the Ice King's time, because she wants to cure his mental degradation somehow. She loves him and wants to save him from the crown. We don't see a whole lot of her in the first 5 seasons. We're going to see a little bit more, but she's never really a prominent character.
Yeah, she's more like a C-lister.
Yeah, but she's so entwined with Simon's story and his struggle against the crown.
Well, I guess we've brought her up. We should move on to Marceline the Vampire Queen, voiced by Olivia Olson. Absolutely beautiful voice. I need to get this name right. She played Vanessa Doofenshmirtz from Phineas and Ferb.
Yep.
And you remember that episode of Steven Universe where Steven walks in on Sadie singing to the radio?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the radio was Olivia Olson.
Huh. Neat.
She is a kind of mellow, half-demon goth girl turned vampire with severe daddy issues.
Yeah, when Marceline was introduced, I didn't quite get the character. She was really just kind of being mean to Finn and Jake. I wasn't catching on at first that the whole thing was just a big setup and pranks, and she was really just trying to be friendly and screw with them.
She loves fucking those people.
Her father is a vampire, her mother is human.
Clarification, her father is a demon.
Demon, okay.
He is half human, half demon. She was a child way back when Simon had lost himself to the ice ground.
At some point became a vampire.
Yeah, are those two holes on her neck birthmarks or actual holes from her being bitten by a vampire?
That's a spoiler, but I'll go ahead and tell you, it's a vampire bite.
It is a bite. Okay, just making sure.
Yeah. She did not have that bite when she was a child. That's how you can tell that she's not a vampire when she's younger.
What is that, like a season 8 spoiler?
Maybe.
See, I like most vampire-like demon characters. You know, she can fly. She takes on a more feminine form, although her true form is really demonic and bat-like.
Unlike most vampire characters, though, she doesn't drink blood. Instead, she drinks the color red.
Yeah, I always found that weird.
Which can include blood. She has no aversion to drinking blood. Yeah. She's done it. She just doesn't need to. She'll turn a apple gray.
Yeah, like there's one episode where they go and check out a cave, and when it's time to take a break and they're bringing out the food, it seems that Jake has already eaten all of the red stuff that they brought with them, and so she is threatening Jake to drink his blood throughout more of the episode while Finn is off doing things.
Hilarious episode, by the way, because by the end, Jake's so hungry he's threatening to cook and eat her. So as one of the other ancients in the show, Marceline's known the Ice King and Princess Bubblegum for a very long time. She has a, I'll say, dense relationship with the both of them in different ways, but she's very close to the both of them. She doesn't really get along with her father, though. Her father is Hunsan Abadir, who, despite his cuddly-sounding name, is the soul-devouring ruler of a demon realm named the Nidosphere. The Nidosphere is not the land of the dead, it's not hell. We see death and the land of the dead in a different episode than the Nidosphere. Definitely not the same thing. I don't even want to go into what the heck the differences are, but they're definitely not the same thing. But Marceline's got some pretty bad daddy issues.
It's also not the Fire Kingdom.
No. Fire Kingdom, the land of the dead, and the Nidosphere are all distinctly different places.
She's got a great singing voice and plays a guitar that is a literal axe.
It's a bass.
Yeah, she plays bass. That's canon.
I would say that she is my favorite character of the show so far, and any episode that features Marceline or her singing is just, I don't know, a treat for me.
I want to talk about my favorite Marceline moment.
Okay.
Favorite Marceline episode, anyway, which is one where she's hanging out with some of her friends, and they are trying to trick Finn and Jake into believing that they are also going to become vampires. And there's this neat moment where she has to break with her friends and being thought of as cool because they're going too far with their pranks. And so it kind of shows the divide between the image that she's putting out and who she really is.
To me, the next most important character is Lumpy Space Princess. Where do we start with Lumpy Space Princess? She's a caricature of teen girls. I feel like Pendleton must have based her on an older sister or a friend or something.
Somebody who was in high school, obviously.
Yeah, I don't know. She's a drama bomb sort of girl. She's a floating, lumpy mass with a face and arms. She's fascinating. Wow, she's like a train wreck.
Whatever reason her parents are fused together, I don't even want to know the logistics of that.
Just assume that's lumpy marriage. I don't know.
Yeah, she's one of the weirder characters, always wants to be the center of attention. One time she tries to break up a wedding while wearing her own wedding dress.
Yeah, she's got to be the center of the party.
Being voiced by Pendleton, this is a male voice coming out of a female character, so it's a little peculiar. I always found it funny that in her story counterpart, Lumpy Space Prince has the exact same voice.
It's kind of androgynous, yeah.
Like BMO.
Oh, yeah, who can tell BMO's sex? I mean, why even bother?
Robot. But Lumpy Space Princess kind of grows up alongside Finn, but very, very differently. She doesn't really mature in the way she would want her to, or the normal way. She starts becoming a better person very slowly, but she's always victim to her own avarice, her own self-interest. She always ends up with terrible, terrible things happening to her because she can't get over herself.
She's like the anti-Finn.
She really is. Which, she's not a villain in any way. She can be the antagonist out of selfishness, but she's
She doesn't
never...
have evil intent. She just has strong self-interest.
Yes, very much so.
Very big comic relief character.
I guess we'll lump the next two characters together, as they're both played by Nikki Yang, who played Candy Chu on Gravity Falls. First up is BMO, an anthropomorphic Game Boy-like device who lives with Finn and Jake. She acts as their... Okay, first of all, yeah, I say she. This character is addressed... Yeah, it's basically non-gender. I have heard he more than twice and she at least once over the course of the show. So it's a little difficult to tell what you're going to base this on. But yeah, BMO would be genderless, although you are hearing Nikki's natural female voice the whole time. And this is the same voice that was used for Candy in Gravity Falls.
BMO is childlike. BMO is almost the personality you would expect from something that's intrinsically for fun and games. BMO has this wonderment, this imagination. BMO doesn't even see the world through normal eyes. BMO sees it as something fantastic. Day-to-day life could be a noir mystery or an adventure throughout the wilderness in his, her own backyard. BMO is just this energized, creative being.
BMO is essentially a child creating the world around them and pretend all adults look on and say, that's so cute.
Yeah, BMO kind of lives in his own little world. The BMO-centric episodes are really interesting in that regard, but I think BMO is not really that interesting in the normal episodes.
We go back to the gender-neutral thing, and that's just not the other characters projecting on them, because it's like a computer. He, she very much identifies as kind of both and neither. She has said, oh, I'm a little boy or I'm a little girl at different times in different episodes, so I thought that was interesting too.
Whatever's fun.
Yeah, they are also content with everything or anything. She literally makes friends with air or a bubble. Like, anything that's around is fascinating to them.
Who is this alter ego that BMO has with her reflection?
Football. Football's hard to get a read on. I don't fully understand football, so I really am not going to say too much on that.
I have no character analysis for BMO's reflection.
Much like Lorraine the Chicken, it's kind of hard to say if football even exists outside of a day.
It's just another character that BMO's creating.
Yeah, I mean, Bebe died. Bebe was the remote control, by the way. The other character portrayed by the same actress is Lady Rainicorn, who is a 25-foot-long magical flying rainbow horse that only speaks Korean.
Unless using a translator, in which case she can sound like an old man.
She is Jake's love interest and wife/girlfriend.
Did they ever get married?
Yeah.
Life
partner.
Yeah, I mean, there's no wedding episode, or, you know.
Yeah.
She's the girlfriend, and then she's pregnant, and, I mean, they're still together. They don't live together, so, I mean, I guess probably not married in a traditional sense. They are definitely monogamous, so,
yeah.
I mean, may as well be married, but I think officially they're boyfriend and girlfriend still.
I think that just speaks to Jake's character more than anything, that he's comfortable not getting married and found the woman of his dreams, who's also cool with that and loves him for it. Lady Rainicorn herself she doesn't have a whole lot of personality built up, but she's very close friends with Princess Bubblegum. She likes to hang out with Finn occasionally. She seems like an overall stand-up lady. You just don't know what the heck she's saying unless you speak Korean.
Yeah, there are some YouTube videos you can find online where people have completely translated her dialogue in an episode, and sometimes she can be a little crude, something that you'll not pick up unless you speak Korean.
The entirety of all of her dialogue has been transcribed on the Adventure Time Wikia.
Much like Jake, she has pretty fantastic power. She can bend light, phase through walls, do all kinds of magical stuff, fly, carry a lot of weight while she's flying. Much like Jake, she doesn't really do a lot with it unless she's helping someone else. I don't think I'd want to call her lazy, but she just doesn't apply her powers for self-gain.
Seems like a fair assessment.
There's a lot of characters that seemingly can have tons and tons of power and seemingly can do all kinds of stuff, but are content to just sit around and not leave their own little area.
It's so true of people in general.
Fair enough.
Save the philosophy for part two, sir.
All right.
Jake seemed like he was going to be freaked out by the premise of becoming a father, but then Lady gave birth to 5 half-rainicorn, half-dog pups that all have, like, very different, peculiar looks about them, and because of their rainicorn half, they basically grew up to the point of being teenagers or young adults within, what, a matter of hours after being born? So that's why Jake determined that he didn't have to live with them anymore, because they were already grown up.
Yeah, it's not like he's a deadbeat father. It's just that they're practically more mature than him already.
Pretty sure Kim is.
Who knows how old they'll be by the end of the show.
Next up, I guess, would be Flame Princess.
Oh, Flame Princess is such a great character.
She's voiced by Jessica DeCicco. She voiced Tambri in Gravity Falls, if you remember that character.
She's the emo girl with the phone. She ends up going out with Wendy's ex-boyfriend.
Flame Princess is nothing like Tambri, though. She's actually really cool.
She's intense.
She is Finn's love interest for a
season and a half or so.
Yeah, which is a good chunk for the scope we've watched. She's trying to fight her evil nature.
Not really evil.
Okay, she's not evil herself, but everyone around her expects to be evil, and she's very self-conscious about that and tries not to be.
Well, she comes from an evil background. The entire Fire Kingdom is very much full of ridiculous espionage and people backstabbing, and she takes over and makes it more on the level.
She is literal living fire. When we're first introduced to her, like, she gets pissed off and will be spreading flames, burning anything around her, and if you put these flames out, it actually hurts her.
She is a elemental. She is the essence of fire itself.
Very, very true. Yeah, she's a sincere and emotional girl, and when she's brought into the show, she's got some family issues because her father has kept her locked up and expects her to be evil and is afraid she'll take the throne.
Evil.
One of the things that I found frustrating about this entire story arc is when Jake goes to find her, because Jake's the one that discovers her, Jake's the one that's looking a girlfriend for Finn, didn't want to find a one that will physically harm him or one that's evil, but he takes what he can get. And Flambeau, little flame elemental, casts a fire protection spell on Jake. At no point in their entire relationship did they go up to Flambeau and say, "Hey Flambeau, can you protect me against flame so I can kiss my girlfriend?" It pisses me off because they didn't forget that when Cinnamon Bun abandons the Candy Kingdom and goes to become Flame Princess's knight, he's always seen blue with that flame shield on. Mm-hmm. They didn't forget that. Just Finn and Jake were too dumb to do that. That's so out of character and so frustrating for me. And it's really one of the low points in the storytelling for me.
Yeah, got a big continuity.
They wrap him up in aluminum foil.
They didn't find a way to do it in a way that...
They immediately just wrote themselves into a corner before she was introduced, and it was frustrating, and it let me down. That was one of the few missteps from the storytelling perspective that really always got to me, and to be honest, I was happy when Finn and the Flame Princess broke up, because I didn't have to deal with that anymore.
I don't know. I just really like Flame Princess. I like her as a character, but I like her more as a device for getting Finn over Princess Bubblegum.
What's up next?
Magic Man!
Yeah, let's go ahead and get this asshole out of the way. Magic Man is one of the antagonists of the series. He is, to me, the most hateable character in the series. He's not fun to watch. He is playful and fun to himself, but you end up seething and hating him the entire time. He is nothing but pure evil. He is basically the Joker with omnipotent powers. He's god-awful.
I really like Magic Man for his contribution to the series, you know, him being a likable character, but up until his introduction, largely the episodes revolved around there being kind of like morals to the story. And the moral to the story where they introduce Magic Man is sometimes people just suck. Like, Finn was turned into a foot.
Magic Man's an asshole. He is, to me, completely unlikable as a character, but in the villainous way. He is well-suited for his role as an antagonist and a foil. He's like a real-life internet troll. He just creates misery and controversy and pain wherever he goes for no reason.
Who else?
The Lich is just so obviously evil. trying to murder Princess Bubblegum or cause the end of Finn and Jake. They're kind of vague for the Lich. He's not in it for the fun. So I didn't get a read on in that way.
The Lich is, to me, the embodiment of oblivion. He is presented as a major challenge to all the heroes. He is never funny. He is single-minded in his desire to end all life. He is a schemer. He is a plotter. He is magical in some weird way where he can possess other entities. He is unknowable, and he appears to be one of the greatest challenges the heroes will ever face. I think the key here is that he is never funny. He never makes jokes. He is never the butt of jokes. The writers make it very clear that while he's on screen, nothing funny happens.
And he's like the only character that is that way. Even Magic Man as a villain has funny moments, and even other serious characters who present serious ideas and things crack jokes. Say the gods and entities, Prismo and Cosmic Owl, right, are in themselves kind of jokey.
Party God.
Party God, yeah. But he is 100% serious. There's no laughs, jokes, anything to do with him at all, in any regard. And he's the only thing in the entire show that's like that, basically.
I love how alien he is. He is unknowable. I said before, he's the embodiment of oblivion, and I really believe that. I think that's the best way to present him.
There's not a whole lot about the character that really stood out to me, except for that episode where he went into that other dimension to change the past.
Yeah.
Where the Jake was secretly the Lich.
No, the one with the mechanical arm and the Jake that was still really a dog.
Yeah, instead of just trying to pretend to be a dog and saying, dog, 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 dog. I think you mean bark.
Yeah, the Lich has some amazing story episodes, some really, really good narratives around him, but as a character, he's one-dimensional by nature, by purpose.
His character design's granted. Cool. His art is like this really dark, gritty zombie monster. He's a Lich.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting thing is that you are seeing him being masqueraded as another character.
Yeah. Well, he's kind of genuinely creepy, ugly, dark, gritty-looking compared to everything else in the show. Even, like, the other antagonistic, mean, evil characters, like
Aberdeen.
Yeah, Aberdeen, or, you know, Marceline's dad, or, say, you know, Magic Man again. They're more cartoony, zany, silly in nature. This guy is or just
even,
like this, like, rotting corpse. Yeah, death itself, yeah. Right?
It is important to note that the Lich isn't death. We see death much in the same way as the Nidosphere is not hell, or the Land of the Dead.
Or the Fire Kingdom.
Or the Fire Kingdom. The Lich is not death, because they are distinct entities in this show. I'm not sure how death and the Lich really interact. I wish we could get that in an episode.
Maybe we will.
But yeah, the Lich is, I would say, the main antagonist of Adventure Time as of this point. We should talk about Tree Trunks.
Tree Trunks is really hard to talk about.
Tree Trunks is a tiny little elephant. She sounds like my grandma. Maybe she's not as old as she sounds. She's very sweet, but she's got some weird ideas, and she's unsettlingly comfortable with her sexuality. She likes to make out in public and stuff. She's really sweet. I mean, she bakes good apple pie. She lives on an orchard.
She's really nice, but I feel uncomfortable wanting to distance myself from her.
Yeah. Have you ever been out with, like, a older relative or something that just says something very... Yeah, you're right. It's just uncomfortable. It's embarrassing.
It's not even, like, racist uncle status. It's hard to put your finger on it.
But that's one of the joys about Adventure Time, though, in that this show has room for a character like this, and it fits no other character, right?
Tree Trunks is my spirit animal.
She is, at some point in the series, married to Mr. Pig, who is sort of this insecure but relaxed guy. He's really not much of a character on his own. Honestly, I feel like Mr. Pig and Tree Trunks are both made completely by their voice acting. I think you could be handed that script, and it would require those voice actors to get those parts right.
Polly Lou Livingston, the role was written for her. Like, Pendleton Ward's like, I'm going to have this character, Tree Trunks, and no one else will voice it but this. This is who I'm writing it for. It's like one of those characters, like Miss Frizzle is the voice actress. Like, we talked about it in that episode. Love or hate her, the character is written for the actress, and it's delivered hilariously.
She appears frequently enough and makes enough of an impact in the show to be mentioned here. I think she's a pretty solid B-list character.
I like Cinnamon Bun.
Yeah, Cinnamon Bun.
Yeah, he's kind of goofy and has this blind loyalty to Princess Bubblegum, and then he kind of gets affiliated with Flame Princess.
He's super dedicated and trusted.
His growth is very much tied to it, how baked he is, I think. And I don't mean, obviously, like, drug affiliation baked, but, like, literally baked. It's mentioned early in the show that he's... Oh, Cinnamon Bun, why is he like that? Oh, he was only half-baked, says Princess Bubblegum. And then later on in the show, he gets cooked by interacting with Flame Princess, and he slowly becomes a different character. I love that. He's just silly fun.
Yeah, he comes off as incredibly stupid and awkward at first, but then after Flame Princess, he's matured more and actually starts to show better intelligence.
He's voiced by D. Bradley Baker. You know him, whether or not you know a character, because he's the guy that does all the weird animal noises in shows. If you've ever watched fucking Avatar The Last Airbender, he does Momo and Appa. And that sounds weird for the fact that you're talking about a monkey and a giant flying bison, respectively. But if you watch that show, these very much have those characters have voices. He does those. And this is one of his few actually human-speaking voices, quote-unquote, that I'm familiar of him with.
Yeah, I remember him as Lion on Steven Universe.
Neptar is a robot that was made by Finn and given accidental life by Ice King, and he was built to prank Jake. He is the most shit-upon character in the entire series. The poor guy just gets left
on the screen. They're playing hide-and-seek for, like, 3 seasons.
Yeah.
He disappeared as a character for over a season.
He's got a bad relationship with Ice King because Ice King is weird with people like that. It kind of foreshadows Marcy's reveals about Ice King's past, actually, how bad his relationship is with Ice King all the way, and how Neptar really wants to try to help Ice King, but can't reach him. He's usually an upbeat guy. It's unfortunate that even Finn treats him like crap, considering how much Finn genuinely likes him.
You just see him at the end of Mystery Dungeon. Ice King is so crestfallen that he could turn the characters that we haven't gone into, Cakeverse, or whatever you want to call them. Cakeverse, is that going to be what we call them?
Sure, yeah.
I like okay, that's the Cakeverse, the Fionaverse. But yeah, I mean, like, Ice King is so crestfallen, and then the person who cheers him up, and effectively, not just, you know, tries to cheer him up, but Neptar says, you know, just close your eyes and use your imagination, and it kind of softens the blow of not being able to make these characters real. He's just a positive guy. There's not much to him. There's no reason to put him in more episodes, but yeah, you're right. He just kind of gets kicked around a little bit, and he's a cool dude.
Yeah, and he can make pies just as well as tree trunks. That's
he can make pies, and he can throw them.
Yeah.
In a never-ending fashion. Yeah. True to his name.
Guys, I think we've come to it. I don't think we can dodge this any longer. We need to talk about the Earl of Lemon Grab.
Airhammer's favorite character.
Okay. This is probably my most hated character in cartoon history right now.
Oh, those are harsh words.
He's a humanoid lemon with a long nose and the most irritating voice ever. Princess Bubblegum created him for some reason, and for one reason or another, he's also now the heir to the Candy Kingdom as a result, which I don't quite understand. I think during some point of discussion within the last couple of weeks, I believe it was you, Deus, compared him to Starscream when it came to voice and personality and something like that. I thought that was an insult to Starscream. Lemon Grab's natural tone of voice is screaming, and I believe, Kappa, you gave a pretty decent impersonation earlier.
I just wish that it hadn't completely blown the mic out, because I was proud of that.
Oh, I think it all came out, actually. Oh,
no, I think the mic probably recorded it. It's just very clipped. It's going to sound like...
The mic found it unacceptable.
This assessment of the character is unacceptable!
I honestly found every episode with the character to be worthless. Like, just not worth watching, because he made it that bad. And then there was the episode where more of them began being made, and I was like, oh, fucking Christ, they're multiplying. And
I don't know, man. To me, he's the character you love to hate. He's like a good heel wrestler. Lemon Grab is never someone you like, but you love to hate him. He is this angry, sociopathic, demented, high-strung, ultra-tense, and annoying, tyrannical asshole.
Yeah. Even to himself, Bubblegum literally can't find anyone that could tolerate this guy. So she's like, you know, the only person that could tolerate him is himself, so I'm going to make another one of them. And they don't get along.
And like, he eats other him.
Yeah, it's just like...
he eats other him.
This guy is a guy that is so aggravating that he can't get along with a clone of himself.
It's funny because my favorite Lemon Grab episode takes place outside of the weird Lemon Grab Kingdom mystery dungeon. Mm. I think is a fantastic place to put him where he works well in an ensemble.
I agree.
Mystery Dungeon is a fantastic episode, by the way.
So my question is, why do Lemon Grab and Lumpy Space Princess never interact other than that one episode? How amazing are they as a on-screen pair?
I mean, two characters completely obsessed with themselves.
Yeah, I know, right?
I feel for Lumpy Space Princess's life in this relationship. He already ate himself.
You don't touch those lumps. Hands off, Buster.
I feel like Lumpy Space Princess could defend herself by biting Lemon Grab.
Oh my god, Lumpy Lemon Grab would be the most terrifying thing ever.
Oh my god. Yeah, well, I guess we kind of skimmed over that. We kind of skimmed over that with the Lumpy Space people, their werewolf rules. They bite people and they turn into them.
Werewolf rules, yeah. It's weird. Don't even think about it.
Hashtag Lumpy Grab.
I need fan art of this.
Oh god. Let's see.
Yeah, so in the universe, in the world, there's all sorts of other assorted characters. Random princesses of various types. A muscle princess, a hot dog princess.
Embryo princess.
An embryo.
Slime princess. Ghost princess.
Yeah. Raggedy princess, who's a weird raggedy doll thing. All kinds of crazy people who are just titled princess. I don't even know if they have kingdoms.
Princess who's not a real doctor.
Yeah. I don't even know if she's a real princess.
Her name was just Princess.
There's candy people, obviously we spoke about them in passing.
Talked about Peppermint Butler.
Yeah, one of my favorites in the entire series is Peppermint Butler, who is this weird satanic ritual evil mastermind, this little schemer.
He's the person most in touch with death.
Yeah.
In the series.
He's on a first name basis with death. There's other weird banana guards. Banana Man, who is Finn and Jake's closest neighbor, who they hardly ever interact with, but who is voiced by Weird Al.
There's also the show's obsession with collecting Star Trek The Next Generation at voice actors.
Ricardio, the heart guy.
Yeah, it's Ricardio, the heart guy. There's also Air, Bubble, slash Air, who's voiced by...
LeVar Burton.
Yeah, LeVar Burton. I know Airhammer was taking a list of them. Do you remember how many...
Let's see, LeVar Burton, Marina Sirtis, Michael Dorn, I've heard.
Oh, yeah, Dalt Finn, played Riker.
Jonathan Frakes, at least those four.
Flame King.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was Worf.
Yep.
The world also has a great deal of other almost human people, humanoids. A lot of them are wizards. You have...
Susan Strong.
Susan Strong is this muscle-bound, huge woman who protects a band of mutant human fish people.
She's not the same thing as Muscle Princess.
No, she's not. She's not a princess, and she might actually be a real human, given one of the little visual cues that we've gotten. She might actually be a real human. She might be the second human alongside Finn, but she's protecting these fish people, and she lives with that tribe. You've got other wizards. Abracadaniel is a really friendly, little, happy wizard guy. He makes rainbows and sparkles and stuff and likes dance.
His wand is a twig with like a little split branch on it. It looks really fragile. Is the frog wizard thing?
Yeah.
Who appears in several episodes?
Life-giving wizard.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great character. I think we get to see a little bit more of him in future episodes.
We do.
So one of the best characters for me, one of the best small-time guest characters, is Prismo, who is this cosmic entity.
Kumail Nanjiani.
Yes.
He's just a cool guy, and that comes through in his character.
Prismo is this wish-granting cosmic entity who lives in a cube. He is basically best friends with Jake immediately. They just strike a chord.
He's like a shadow on the wall or something.
Yeah.
He's a lot like Jake, but he has a strong sense of responsibility, so when Jake wants to use his one wish to get a sandwich, Prismo's like, I could make you a sandwich.
Yeah, Prismo is one of my two favorite characters, though. Prismo and Peppermint Butler are definitely my favorite characters from the entire series, and I would have felt bad if we didn't talk about them. I think that just about does it for characters. There's so many other little characters, so many candy people.
There's so many one-episode characters.
Root Beer Guy,
yeah.
Battle Balls.
Mr. Cupcake.
Princess Bubblegum convinced him to sacrifice himself.
James.
That's the other thing. And the ogre? Yeah. The big ogre? What was the big...
Donnie,
yeah. The big obnoxious dude that Jake turns into a good gentleman via stupid songs about chores and shit. There's so many lovable one-off characters. Like.
Yeah, it's so much a character-driven show. There's really quite a community.
Oh, we forgot characters. Another thing. The snail. Yeah, I just want to mention it. The snail's in every episode.
There is a snail who is not really a character so much as a...
set piece.
You can find the snail in every single episode. Some of them are very obvious. Most of the time, he's just in the background.
Fun fact, I never once found him. I never bothered looking.
Sometimes they're really poor in the way they hide him. Yeah, a lot of times he's in the very background of a scene, but you're never really paying attention to the background that heavily, and that's where he's at, and you have to be actually actively searching for it. Other times I've seen him when, like, he's positioned in the middle of a frame of a scene, and it comes right after, like, the major thing going on in the scene right beforehand. So, like, my eye just catches him because he's just all of a sudden, oh, there he is.
Fun fact, they largely do that in the video games, too.
He's possessed by the Lich, and that is some of the episodes where he's obvious to see because he's a big part of the episode. Yeah, it's just a neat little thing I thought we should mention.
I think we're out of characters, unless you guys have another minor character shout-out you want to make.
Just the Cake-a-verse.
Yeah. Man, how do we even describe this? The Ice King has a set of fan fiction books that is basically Finn and Jake, where every character has gender reversal.
So what's the rule of the internet that says that for...
Rule 63.
I knew that Airhammer would be the one to answer that question. Thank you, Airhammer.
Okay, so yeah, I guess rapid fire, and then we can discuss them. We have Fiona, who is a female version of Finn, played by Madeline Martin, who played Becca Moody on Californication. She looks a hell of a lot more human than Finn ever has. Like, she actually looks like a character. I would have to assume this has to do with Ice King's imagination. We have Cake, who is a cat, not a dog, played by Roz Ryan, who was Bubble on The Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack. Prince Gumball, who
MPH.
Is... and Neil Patrick Harris, yep. The Ice Queen, Gray DeLisle. She is one of those actors, much like John DiMaggio. She has a absolutely massive resume. She is the modern Daphne from Scooby-Doo, modern Jane Jensen, and Frankie on Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends.
And Azula from Avatar The Last Airbender. I didn't get her signature, but I met her.
And rounding it out, Marshall Lee, the Vampire King, played by Donald Glover. Troy Barnes from Community.
And also Childish Gambino from Rap.
Luffy Space Princess becomes Luffy Space Prince, which is basically the exact same character.
They're not the same character.
Say the word mustache for me.
Faint
just say the word
mustache. Mustache. Want it again? Mustache.
There's a clip out of that for sure.
It shows such a commitment that the show made a separate intro just for the Fiona and Cake episodes. Let's move on to the setting. The setting is this whimsical...
Land of Ooh.
Yes, Land of Ooh. It's whimsical, lighthearted, magical world set 1,000 years after an apocalyptic war destroyed all of human society.
They haven't really elaborated on that, have they?
They've hinted at it. They haven't really fully explored what happened to turn what we know into what Adventure Time knows.
Well, we know that via one of the flashback episodes, there's a big bomb that goes off. And sometime before that, everything is somewhat normal.
We can also put a lot of pieces together by looking at the Farm World universe. I think they do use the term Great Mushroom War in the show at least once.
My interpretation is that in the universe where the bomb never went off because it was frozen in place, everything was like normal still. And fast forward 1,000 years where Finn and Jake are around. Finn looks slightly different and he's not out doing adventuring and shit. He's just like living on a farm. And Jake is a legit dog. There's no magic in the world at all. The only magical thing in that universe and that outcome is...
The crown.
The crown and Marceline. Because Marceline's half...
Who's a crazy old woman.
Yeah, she's a half...
The same vein as Ice Queen.
It appears that the Lich came about along with magic from either a nuclear or biological bomb that exploded and caused the collapse of all human society. We see very early on post-apocalyptic remnants of current human society. Well, not current. It seems like whatever happened in the late 80s, early 90s, maybe even around 2000 era. I mean,
Business Time is really the first episode that really explores the idea.
Yeah.
From what I've got from it, do you know how kind of regular show had a very ambiguous time setting? Kind of like 80s, but not quite. They also had modern phones. It's very purposely ambiguous.
It feels a little more concrete to me than that, mostly because you get to hear the saddest rendition of the Cheers theme song ever recorded.
by Ice King.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I feel like everything is targeted exactly toward people my age in this world.
There's so many VHS tapes, so few CDs, more tube TVs than flat screens. It feels like an age of transition into more modern technology before things fully switched over. And to me, that means mid-90s-ish. Also, given the state of decay of a lot of the artifacts, it seems like maybe the 1,000 years that they keep talking about was only a few decades. All the cars and stuff that you see really should have been rusted out by the time Adventure Time takes place. So maybe 1,000 years is consistently wrong, or not the same.
Or magic has anti-rust properties.
Maybe it's like Watership Down, because it doesn't really matter how many years it's been since the world was the world that we know. It's just different now.
It's just in the past.
Yeah, that's true.
It used to be like this.
The existence of magic is also a pretty major part, because you have so many weird wild kingdoms that are the main setting, and I guess the nearby wilderness is also part of the setting. I'd say the major setting is Fenugreek's treehouse, adjacent to the Candy Kingdom, and I guess between the Candy and Ice Kingdoms.
There's also, like you said, a whole bunch of other kingdoms in this world, and they're all of varying sizes.
Tree Chunks lives out in the forest.
Yeah.
Which is probably in the same general area that Lumpy Space Princess lives currently.
Is she living in the woods or in that motel still? I can't remember.
I don't know. Maybe she got kicked out of the motel. Wouldn't be totally out of character.
No, it wouldn't. But the setting is absolutely fascinating, because it comes off as this absolute storybook nonsense. But you have to take it as literal. I think the Great Mushroom War is one of the defining parts of the setting, but we just don't know enough yet about it.
It's just this great disaster. It's Ragnarok, it's Armageddon, it's the end of the world.
Yeah, Earth is no more, and who took its place?
And also, the planet itself has a big giant chunk missing out of it.
Also, speaking of which, there is a society on Mars led by a giant avatar of Abraham Lincoln. I don't know why.
Which includes Glob.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything else to say about the setting. It's, by all accounts, it should be a disaster, but they make it work.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy and zany. It's very consistently like that, though.
If you'd like to move on to story, then I'm prepared. Are you guys ready?
This is my meat and potatoes right here. I've been ready this whole time.
Save some for the second episode.
We see the other characters' lives kind of progressing in the background. Like, one time, we leave Tree Trunks and Mr. Pig, and they're just getting to know each other. We come back a couple episodes, and next time we see them, they're kind of, like, more close. And then a couple episodes later, they're getting married. Not only is it continuity, but the world is going around outside of them as well. Another good example, that as much as you hate them, Airhammer, the Lemon Kingdom, right? They have this really big sense of progression. So, yeah, there's stuff going on in the world. It's kind of nice. The world feels big, and events are happening outside the scope of Finn and Jake.
There are characters that you should care about, or not the main two protagonists.
Exactly.
The method of world building, using those little chunks, those little bite-sized pieces of lore and narrative, I think that's shared amongst a lot of short-format modern shows. Rebecca Sugar took that into Steven Universe. And in a lot of the same ways, I feel like the short format of Adventure Time does hurt certain episodes. I feel like a lot of them, despite the very good pacing, could have done with being a bit longer. And I think they should have employed two-parters earlier and certainly more frequently. To me, the storytelling method is very strong, but they don't always resolve the stories in a way I find fully satisfying. The overall big narrative, the unveiling of what's going on in the world, that's very satisfying. It's like scratching an itch every time you find out a little bit more about the Great Mushroom War. It's really interesting every time you see Marceline and Ice King on screen at the same time, because you know there's something, some little tidbit here, something hidden in the dialogue that hints at something bigger. Even Marceline and Princess Bubblegum, their weird, rocky, almost romantic relationship that they've got going on, whatever happened between them in the past, we don't know for sure, but every time we see the two together, we get a little bit more of a hint.
Yeah, I noticed how a number of episodes just ended very abruptly.
Often with a Jake fart.
The first episode ends with a fart. It's not Jake, but it's a fart.
So, we already kind of covered voice actors.
I still want to say that the entire cast is great. All the guests are great.
a really big highlight of the show is how many just great people and personalities and well-known. You're going to catch the voices, and it's fun seeing so many people you know in a show that's so fun and entertaining.
I'm surprised they haven't brought H. John Benjamin at this point, since H. John Benjamin is in everything.
I'm kind of waiting on them to be in the last season as dueling
gods.
It'd be
a shame if they didn't get fucking Picard on there.
I know.
Like, they just need to complete the collection, man, but I don't know if they're
Patrick
gonna...
Stewart is probably going to be in the last episode. Like, Jesus.
Stewart needs to be. It's just, he'd complete the Next Generation cast, basically. That's very important to me. What's some of your favorite voice guests so far, Airhammer?
Mostly the Star Trek cast that we've already gone over.
Yeah, I know. I knew you were going to say that. I really love that, too. Brent Spinner we need as well.
Yes. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was George Takei?
He played Ricardo, the Heart.
Right.
He's been in two episodes, yeah. The Lou Ferrigno, the original TV show Hulk. Mm-hmm. It was Billy. There's so many people that I want to mention, but I'm like, that's season six onwards, so I can't say that. But yeah, I mean, it's just something that continues beyond the episodes that we're talking about. It just continues to be a really strong point, is their ability to recruit a very strong guest voice cast.
There's another part of the sound design that's really obvious and important, is the intro. What do you guys think?
Short, to the point, mostly visual, very few lines. Yeah.
The song, yeah. This is one of those
intros. I think it fits it well.
Yeah. The song is great, but this is really one of those intros where it's carried by the visual, so...
And it's sung by, again, Lumpy Space Princess Pendleton Ward. Fun will never end its adventure time.
We watched all those episodes and we saw the intro every single time, but from the source that we were watching, we saw the end credits maybe twice that entire time. And outside of that, I've also watched the end credits in German once on YouTube. It's a very nice little beautiful song.
Come along with me, with the butterflies and bees. That's actually a song on my local karaoke list, which I will eventually learn the song's lyrics that are not the first two lines.
The music is really one of my favorite parts of the show right now. Do you have any particular favorites that you've heard?
Yes. What was missing? What is it? What am I to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called I'm Just Your Problem. That one, along with the song that Finn sings shortly after in the same episode, those are both really good. Remember You, where Marceline sings with Ice King, is also very nice. Bacon Pancakes and Tough Tootin' Baby are...
Tough Tootin' Baby is my favorite running gag of the entire show. Every time that it pops up, it's completely unexpected, and it's always just coupled with this image of a young Finn in a diaper just mashing his hands like he's doing the fucking twist or something, and it's always there to embarrass Finn.
I'd like to point out that the songs are most of the time in universe, like the characters themselves are singing them, kind of like Steven Universe follows the same approach that the characters themselves are singing them, unlike, very rarely do you see the songs as narrator over the top of the action type stuff. I know this is a hard example because regular show use actual real life music. There's a couple exceptions, like there's a couple songs where they're playing over montage while like Finn and Jake are evicted from their house by Marceline. But for the most part, the characters are singing in-universe. I just thought that was something to point out. It's not like music played over it.
A couple others that I enjoyed are actually from the alternate universe. Oh, Fiona and Good Little Girl.
And Bad Little Boy.
Bad Little Boy.
Because Donald Glover. I'm always going to rep Donald Glover. I just think he's a great contribution to the show and everything that he's ever done.
Yeah, this is also kind of like, I don't know if her debut, but Rebecca Sugar, who would later go on to make Steven Universe, kind of started here. She wrote a lot of the songs, which is not a surprise, considering she'd go on to do the same in her own show.
I think her debut was probably the outro song, Butterflies and Bees, or whatever it's called. You can definitely tell when she's been a part of any given song. I don't even know how to describe it.
She has a feel. Long story short, the music's great. The songs are fun.
Yeah, you can definitely pick out some of her music. The song Oh Bubblegum that the Ice King sings definitely has similar tones to that of part of the extended Steven Universe intro theme. I definitely picked up on it when I heard the background tones.
What about the actual sound effects themselves? Did any of you guys know anything? Because I sure didn't.
the sound effects were realistic in style. They weren't really slide whistles or plops or anything Looney Tunes Tom and Jerry cartoony. They definitely sounded more real world for the most part, which I think lends to taking the environment more seriously and taking what you see on screen more seriously. I think if there were any slide whistle drops or cartoony splats or whatnot, it would take you out of the moment.
Yeah, it's very straightforward. It doesn't try to do anything super amazing, fantastic via the sound effects. It's always the zany art style that pulls you in, and the sounds are just there to accent it.
The art style is simple, silly, it's vivid colors, it helps blend the strange and weird world with the comedy. I find the designs are visually appealing with a lot of curves, a lot of simple shapes put together. They were probably built partly to be easy to animate, but I think that helps the presentation. A lot of the characters are simple shape for a body and then almost rubber hose limbs, a la early Fleischer cartoons and early Disney cartoons.
Cuphead.
Same influences, yes.
Yeah.
The backgrounds are also extremely rich in detail. We've talked about the snail before. The snail is certainly not the only thing you can find back there. The backgrounds are super rich in detail. It's a really interesting contrast to see very simple characters on backgrounds that are full of little nods, references, and details.
The art is very, very consistent. There's a lot of shows we've watched and talked about where they have lots and lots of character models, lots and lots of characters that are in the background, like Transformers, like, you know how many obscene a number of different Transformers there are, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, they fucked up all the time. Why is this character here? Or why is that character miscolored? You know, whatever. You don't see that in this show. You never see a random candy person out of place. You never really see big, glaring, obvious mistakes.
I think the general normal Adventure Time art style is absolutely brilliant because you can never really tell what's literal and what's a gag until after it's passed. You don't know if it's funny until something has occurred that lets you allow... You need to decide whether it's funny or not. That is so brilliant.
I think that kind of plays into what we were talking about in the first couple of chunks of this episode, is that really there are so many characters that you kind of dismiss as one-off characters. The rest of the universe did not take them seriously.
Mm. The art style just harmonizes with that entire philosophy so well. The fact that it works very well with it, the fact that the sound design helps you take it seriously, that it's an accent to it rather than something that would normally go with it based on the visual style. Everything is fine-tuned to give just the impression that the team wants, and I think that is very remarkable.
Yeah.
It speaks to the quality of the entire production team.
I also like the way that a lot of the characters are very simply drawn. Finn would not be a hard character to draw from memory.
A good juxtaposition to that would be the Lich and Ricardio's face as well, which are both villains, at least antagonists.
Yeah. Every once in a while they go very realistically looking.
How about we round out this recording with references and influences then?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
The two things that stuck out most to me, especially throughout the first season, first of all, is how much of this program influenced Terraria, because there is so much in here.
Blade of Grass is totally a direct reference.
Weapons, monsters. In episode 4, they mention the Wall of Flesh itself, so...
Yeah, a lot of these are shared references with Dungeons & Dragons and tabletop RPGs.
Mm-hmm. Terraria came out a year after Adventure Time came out on television, so there definitely appears to be some major influences there. Another one that hit me was Animal Crossing, which came to me when I saw Tree Trunks for the first time, in that she is this colorful little elephant that lives in this very well-decorated home out in the woods.
I don't know why, but I just imagined Tree Trunks' voice, but Animal Crossing-ized. Like, you know, the... Like, the Charlie Brownification.
Yeah.
Like,
Animalese.
Yeah, Animalese.
Somebody Tree mod Trunks. It.
It almost kind of fits, too, because you have Finn, who is essentially this only remaining human that is living in a world full of animals and other weird creatures. So it's almost kind of like you combine the human playable character of Terraria with the human character of Animal Crossing, mix the two worlds together somewhat, and that's Adventure Time. Like, Lady Rainicorn, do we actually know what she is? Like, I understand that a Rainicorn is a thing here, but she reminded me of the, what do you call him, Wyvern from Terraria again?
There's definitely lots of, Airhammer kind of hinted at already, influences from classic tabletop-y RPG elements.
I'm going to avoid any specific influences or inspirations because I want to save that for the entire series in our second episode. But I'll say that there weren't many direct references that I spotted. Obviously, when there was guest voice talent, sometimes they did their thing and sometimes they made hints to other characters they played. George Takei did his oh my and full package things, which was delightful. The only direct reference that I spotted that really stuck out to me was the Sailor Moon Frog Prince. I don't think there were any other blatant overt references, at least officially.
Who is the Frog Prince? I watched a lot of Sailor Moon.
He was just this gigantic frog that went around kissing things, and Finn had to kiss him. His transformation was a Sailor Moon transformation. He unwrapped, there was pink sparkles, his muscles wrapped around his skeletons. It was a Sailor Moon reference. You should go watch the video of that.
No,
that
I probably 100%. Just watched it, you know, 3 years ago, and I don't remember what that transformation
was. It was a very early episode, which probably explains why it was a blatant reference, but yeah, that was the only real blatant reference I remember.
So yeah, thanks for listening to part one. We will touch base again with you viewers when we watch seasons 6 through 9 or further, depending on where the show goes.
It's already been officially announced the show's ending with season 9 and a movie.
Ah.
So the second episode will be seasons 6 through 9, the movie, and the webisodes.
Uh-huh.
And maybe some references to the video games and other supplemental media.
And we'll be expanding on character growth, new characters, new plot, new music, etc. And yeah, we hope that you will check us out then.
Thanks for listening.